like the sayings, they're all coming in. Terry Wallace is here. She's brisk outside, plough.
Hello, Andy. I'm freezing my butt off.
There's one for us. Thank you very much. There's a bit to talk about, isn't there, today? It just, this has been a funny week. There's been stuff popping up left, right and centre.
Plenty on. There's still plenty on, and I suppose, I mean, so much about the game and where all that's going, and obviously we're just getting snippets of it. I mean, we don't know everything, and you know, I haven't seen any vision or anything, as I would expect you haven't either. So that will be for those that are looking at making the decisions eventually. To come up with what's right and what's wrong, but a lot going around that, but there's still a lot in the periphery as well, isn't there?
No doubt. You are now convinced, like most of us, I imagine, that even though we don't know what the changes are going to look like, there will be changes to the way we play our footy next year.
Yeah, well, I take it back, and I use the drones that now clubs use for training purposes to try to explain a little bit of it. And once upon a time, it wasn't drones, it was just the coaches working and reacting. If we go back to when we had absolute positions, so you had a back pocket, and then you had, you know, the half back line, and then you had your centre line, your half forward line. If you can think about it, or just envisage in your own head, full back line, space, half back line, space, centre line, space. So what happened? What, over a period of time, they sort of said, we're going to shut down and completely close down that space, because clubs, as they become professional, are getting better at using the ball. And so the more space in between the lines that there is, the more pure the ball will be going from one end, counter-attack, going back the other way. So they sort of said, we'll close down the space. Then they got the availability of drones and being able to look at it and analyse where the space was still there, even with their zoning. And so therefore they got better at shutting down, completely closing down any form of space that was left on the ground. So that's how it's evolved over a period of time. And you know, those that were at the forefront of it were doing it better and better and better, and therefore getting better result. And so everyone plays follow the leader and does exactly the same
thing.
That's
staggering, isn't it? So technology has helped.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely it has.
100%.
So, and that's stuff that we never get to see in a coverage.
No, it was being done. Look, I can remember, you know, back when I was still coaching, you know, it Clarko with the cluster, and that's where it sort of started. Geelong were doing a form of it at exactly the same time. Ross Lyon started to take it to another level. But around that time, I can remember, you know, as coaches, we'd sit on the ground, and this goes all the way back to when, you know, Robert Walls first started putting in a zone for kickouts.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was exactly what that was trying to achieve, exactly the same thing. But I can remember sitting there and going, okay. Yeah, and we would sit in behind the zone sort of play and sort of see, okay, yeah, this looks far more difficult to be able to get, you know, clean ball movement out than what it would if we had a normal sort of structure. And then you'd look for where the spaces are, stop training. You know, we need to close down that space. We need to shut down that space. But, yeah, obviously when they got the drones in and they could get above it and show the players exactly where the spaces were opening up, the players then could see it for their own eyes and be able to shut it down.
So the coaches weren't watching the players at training, they were watching a video monitor.
A lot of that would be done afterwards.
Okay, right.
Because, I mean, if you're thinking about I'm saying that both would be done.
Yep.
I'd stepped away by the time the drones come in.
Yeah.
So I'm not as privy to exactly how it works, but I would say both would be going.
Yeah,
I think you would have a couple of coaches whose sole responsibility was to, you know, decipher and look at that information, whether that's available on the spot. I'm not sure how much of that goes on, but certainly back office stuff, sit down, have a look at that, present it to the players, go back out, shut it down even more.
A group of players, including Patrick Dangerfield and Rory Sloane, met with the AFL yesterday, planned to discuss potential changes to enhance the state of the game. They were shown footage of Hawthorn's training session, the one they had on Saturday morning, using starting points and other variations. Dangerfield spoke to Jared about it this morning. It was glowing in his support of starting positions.
To be honest, I really like the look of it, Jared. I think it really does open up the game, and we're all able to see the differences between how it's played now, so how teams structure up currently, and then the starting positions. And it's a far more exciting game, I think. It certainly opens it up. There's less numbers around, stoppages, less congestion, and you're able to move the ball more freely. So it's certainly something that I think we should seriously consider. I suppose the visual of it, what came to mind for me straight away was sort of circa 2005 when Chris Judd would break out of a stoppage and there'd be no one around him. That's what it sort of looked like, because players could move out of the stoppage and then they weren't all of a sudden confronted with a wall of five or six players, whether it be your forward line and the opposition defence. You had more space to be able to execute skill under, which made the ball movement far more freer. I think in the vision that we watched yesterday, it was roughly three players playing closer to goal at both ends of the ground. So it's certainly something that that I think has merit.
And this is for around-the-ground stoppages as well. So the 6-6-6 for the centre bounce, but this is particularly for around-the-ground stoppages.
Exactly right. So it is merely just a starting position, and then once the ball goes up, you're, you know, free to move wherever you like. But you know, I certainly don't think anyone can judge the AFL and say they've been sitting on their hands. They're being very proactive. It's something that, you know, I think we can improve our game with.
Without seeing it, just trying to visualise what that looks like and the application of it on game day, right? Getting people back at this, because it's not, they haven't decided yet whether it's just going to be centre bounces. This could be ball ins, ball ups around the ground. That's still in play as far as
it depends on whether there are ball ins.
Well, it does depend on that. Well, there's going to have to be some, aren't there? Some, I mean, there are still some ball ins.
Last
it's a,
touch.
Yeah, but, I mean, but if it's a disputed marking contest, there'll still be, but not nearly as many, obviously. Do you like the sense of what it looks like?
Yeah. But until you see it in application, it's very difficult because, okay, what penalties are there if players don't get back, and how much time have they got to get back into their formative positions? Those sort of things, you know, until you sort of see the application of it. But I like the sense of it. And why wouldn't you like it if you're Paddy Dangerfield?
Well, it's perfect for him.
Absolutely. And I'm not, I've spoken to Paddy about the whole of game. I've had conversations with him in the past at a couple of functions that I've done with him. And he is, I mean, that's why he's on the Players Association. I mean, he is really wanting to drive the game to a better spot. So I'm not suggesting that Paddy's looking after self-interest at all.
Yep.
But for the good players in the competition, of course they should want that, because it allows them to show and put on, you know, the display that they, well, that we want to see them.
Well, Terry, when do we see in the game now, when do we see players with open ground in front of them? How often does that happen?
Hardly ever.
When they get one out the back, a long ball.
When Collingwood play Melbourne.
Exactly. When there's been congestion, somehow they get through it and one bloke's off to the races and he's getting the ball in midfield. And off he goes with the whole 50.
Well, the only time we almost see it now, Andy, is when the bloke's running into an open goal.
That's it. Because
it's got over the back and the space is behind. The space is not in front.
Exactly. So the more we can, I'm all for letting the good players play. Let players who can have got the ability to be expressive.
Spot on.
Let them play. And the problem, that's the problem now, isn't it? I mean, we don't give them. And he cited the Chris Judd example from the Judd early days. That's what Dangerfield can do, and that's what the good players can do. It's not just a little cluster of players who've got the capacity to do that. Every side right now has probably got half a dozen players given a bit of rope. They could do it.
It'd be interesting. I mean, have our backmen learnt how to defend if these rules come in? Because they've been working on a full team defence, but if the ball starts to flow quicker and burst out of stoppage, they're going to be able to defend one-on-one again.
What a fantastic question. I can't wait to see that. And we saw a bit of it on the weekend. I mean, you know, the Collingwood, because they did start Stevenson deep on the weekend and held the position, which has been done by a couple of other clubs, they forced a few old-fashioned type one-on-ones. Not many, but there were a couple of times when a defender, and Nev Jetta was one of those who on a couple of occasions got caught defending, and the kid did okay. Like, the kid did okay against a couple of senior veteran defenders.
Absolutely. Well, let's go Richmond and Geelong, who play on the weekend. I think both of those defensive units do a magnificent job. Richmond's more senior-bodied, you know, with obviously Asprey and Rance have been there together for quite a period of time. Geelong is younger doing an absolutely brilliant job. And we've spoken on this program about how I want to see that group stay together. But both of those work in unison.
Yes.
Right? They work as a team. If the ball is breaking and we've got forward running players coming up, bursting out forward of the packs, will they be able to keep that team structure as much, particularly out of stoppage when they've had to go back into, let's say it's three inside 25, three inside 50, three pairings of both.
Yep.
There'll be more one-on-ones.
Oh, and won't it underline and illustrate? And I guarantee you would have played with a player.
The backman won't want it.
No chance will they want it. But there must have been a guy probably in your days at Hawthorn, maybe one of your other clubs, but there certainly was a player that I grew up watching who was magnificent in the days of one-on-one defensive setups, who could isolate and identify, and I'm talking about Bruce Dool.
Yeah.
He could identify when one of his teammates was under pressure, in trouble, and Dool, so routinely, even in the days of one-on-one defense, he could often get over there and be third up. Somehow he had this intrinsic ability to read that, and it was part of what made him a great player.
Yeah.
It'll be more difficult for that player to exist now, immediately in this transition period, than it would have back 30 or 40 years ago.
Well, only because they've trained, like, let's call it for 6 to 8 years, Alex Rance. He's trained for 6 to 8 years to be able to get off and assist and be able to work on that. It's just interesting to see how it goes.
I'd love you to sit down. The notion of how this changes, a tactical setup, coaching tactics, it's probably too much to ask you to come up with how this would impact that now. But it'd be good to... It's a little challenge I wouldn't mind setting you.
But you need to know some of the distinct rules around how it's going to work. So my biggest question straight away is, okay, their starting positions. People will still try to crush the ground, what we just spoke about then.
Yep.
They'll try to come up and really, you know, sort of push the press. But how far can they come up according to when is going to be the next stoppage? And how much time are you giving them to get back before they actually restart the game? And if they're not back, what are the penalties? Is it just a free kick straight away the other direction? So unless you know those little things, it's hard to know how far the coaches are going to push the envelope one way or another. Look, it's going to be... I'd love to be a fly on the wall just sitting in there and listening to some of the conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Rich is in Narre Warren, 21 past 12. A heap of other stuff to get through on the way through to 1 o'clock. Good afternoon to you, Richard.
Yeah, g'day, guys. It fascinates me that with the talent of the guys in the midfield now, if you're given so much rope, they'll be able to ping the ball from 50 out anyway. So the forward play, the big contest, the big marking contest, and the defender, it may become extinct or may actually slow down because they've got so much talent. They get that freedom to break through. Who needs to kick it to your forward and spot him up if you can ping from 50 on your way through?
I think it just depends on, if we're sort of saying this is coming off the back of clearance, I think it just depends on where that stoppage is on the ground because they're still going to run into traffic. So they're going to be able to burst perhaps away from a stoppage. If it's on a half-back flank, well, you're still going to be using the forwards. If it's centre forward, you're absolutely right, Richard. They've got the capabilities, a Dangerfield, tucking the ball under his arm, running 15 or 20, and then banging it from 55. They're absolutely capable.
Terry, there's a lot of questions without answers at the moment, but is this too radical a change to bring in next year?
I'd like to know how much trialling they would do. I mean, we know of one trial.
Yep.
How much trialling they would do and how it needs to be ticked off.
And let's say the AFL, the will of the AFL is to bring this in sooner rather than later. Let's presume that it is 2019 and they want to enact this. Will clubs be starting to work on this now? I mean, they're as busy as hell right now trying to get from one week to the next. But is this the sort of stuff that if you're a clubland now, you're starting to go, boys, we need to start blocking away a couple of hours a week to work out what we're going to look like if this comes in?
Once you think... Look, you brainstorm anyway.
Yep.
There is not a footy club out there that wouldn't spend some time, it might be only 2 hours a week, but would spend some time sort of saying, what does the game look like now? What is the game going to look like in the future? Where are we at? And just sit around and have conversation about strategies and tactics and where the game is heading. So all clubs are going to be doing that. So would they be looking at this? Yes. But until you get some answers of, one, how it's going to look, and two, how quickly it's going to come in, you might be working on something that you're wasting your time on.
I don't think
you're going to be. I mean, I think this is coming in, but it's how quickly and how much information can they get to the clubs. What time frame that is, I think, would be dependent on when it comes in.
And a text message before you get to the break, what sort of impact will it have on list management and the type of player you recruit to your footy club?
Well, it will clearly have impact.
No doubt.
And some of that will depend on interchange rotations, the other parts of the jigsaw puzzle as well. So clearly it will have implication.
Afternoons to Subway. Mesquite Chicken is back at Subway. I imagine this probably... Look, we might open some time up a bit later just to take the temperature. It's going to be one of those things. Not offer, get you to offer changes, but just whether your preparedness to accept change is just shifting a little bit as you're starting to hear more of the potential detail that's coming out.
It is 100%.
Oh, well, see, I reckon my sense is that the people are starting to shift.
He's got to revisit himself internally. His drive to the footy. I mean, it just seems to need some energy pills or something. I watched him pretty closely. He doesn't go to a lot of right spots, but when he does, he doesn't do it with any sort of urgency. He's got to become urgent. Otherwise, he'll just be another one of those blokes that drifts out of the game.
Well, it's Blighty. Speaking to Jared about, I reckon no clues required who he might be speaking about, because it's been the conversation that's been had about Jack Watts.
Yep.
Forever, Terry.
It has. Yeah, it has. And I suppose I listened to Blighty this morning and I just sort of thought about the fact and thought I'd just open the conversation with you, Andy. Does a leopard ever change its spots?
Mm.
Okay. So you've got players who come into this competition that have got obvious strengths. Every player that comes into the competition has got some form of weapon. Either they're super fit, or they've got beautiful skills, or they're extremely quick, or they read the game better than some, or they're a tough nut. They're prepared to stick their head over the ball and are more courageous than some. All of them have got weapons, but quite a few of them have got deficiencies, foibles, that are there as well. And it's the balance between what they can do and what they can't do that's the difference between, do you keep them, don't you keep them, where are they at? I think another player, and I'll go back to Jack Watts in a minute, Jaden Hunt is a player that I think we all really like when he's playing and really enjoy his footy. And what are his weapons? Obviously, his absolute speed. His ability not only to have speed, but to use the speed and take the game on is something that we love about the way that he plays. But it's been recognised by Melbourne at the moment that his decision-making and ball use, because he goes at such speed, runs himself into trouble at times. He might be one that might be advantaged by the game opening up a little
bit. My word, absolutely.
So he runs himself into troubles, so therefore he's got to make decisions, very quick decisions on the run, and sometimes those decisions are either wrong or his ball use is wrong, hence he finds himself out of the team. Each club knows their own player quicker than what opposition clubs do. And the art of list management is to make a decision on, are their strengths going to drive them forward, or are their weaknesses going to hold them back? And if you believe that there's weaknesses, you'll know them more intimately than your opposition will know them. So therefore, you've got to make a decision to sort of say, look, this guy might stay in the game, but I don't think he's going to come on in the manner that we think he is. And we can probably offload him to somebody else who sees the strength side of it, but hasn't identified as clearly as what we have the weakness side of it. And that's when you need to trade them out. Hence, we get to Jack Watts. And there's so many of those weaknesses as well. So it is decision-making and skill. It is a player who, as Blighty just explained, and I think it's one of the main things. Blokes who don't necessarily want to get bashed up out there, don't want to get hurt, right? And so play a little more comfortable. Boy, oh boy, you're going to be good. And there's some in the competition, and there are some that have finished their careers in the competition that have played safe throughout all of their careers, but they've been brilliantly minded or brilliantly skilled to be able to do that and still carve out a 250, 300-game career.
Some people hear that and hear, oh, he's potting blokes. He's sledging players. Some people who've got that view of footy will hear that as a that sort of criticism of a footballer.
Well, that criticism is there and it will hold back. If you're not prepared to get hurt out there, if you're really, you know, in the mindset of, you know, I'm careful about what decisions I make and I'm calculated about the risk that I'm prepared to take for my team, that will stop some players because some players haven't got the brilliance. So that is a foible, just like the decision-making, just like, you know, intensity levels that we're talking about with Jack. That's a foible. Now, some players, it's not overcome. You can overcome it if you're good enough in other areas. If your weapons in other areas are strong enough, you'll still have a career. You might have a 300-game career, but it'll stop another player absolutely completely in their tracks. And I think over my period of coaching, I would say I've had at least 100 players that I thought were easily good enough with their other skill sets, but didn't really want to fight the fight or didn't really want to get hurt, and it stopped.
And that held them back.
Stopped them all.
So listen,
stopped them all from ever making.
Here's a fascinating thing about this, and this goes to Jack Watts and the way one group of football people see the Port Adelaide see Jack Watts and think we can use what he's got.
They're looking at the strengths.
We want the upside. We're going to bring him over. We think we know what the weaknesses are, but the strengths are we're going to live with them. Well, weaknesses are universal, aren't they?
Yep.
And at some stage,
and so
in this,
Melbourne are sitting there. Sorry, I've just interrupted.
No, you,
and Melbourne are sitting there at exactly the same time, sort of saying, "Yeah, we know the strengths, and we know it's got the capability of biting us on the bum, but we also know the weaknesses, and we've taken this as far as what we can, and we think that we've got to let him go. And if he bites us on the bum, so be it."
So you can't, in the case of someone like Jack Watts specifically. Have we seen enough now, even if you love what he does when he's got ball in hand and he's doing the things he can do well, you've seen enough now to know that you're never going to be able to put that other stuff in?
I don't think that'll ever change.
No.
I don't think that'll ever change. And it was just, again, a balance of in the right side and the right environment, could good, you know, good Jack overweigh bad Jack.
Yep.
But every player, I mean, we're talking about Jack here, we're talking about Jaden Hunt, every player has good points and bad points. I mean, even the best players in the competition don't defend as hard because they're best players in the competition. Everyone's got
a weakness,
something that's a weakness.
Yeah. Tom Morris put out not a great tweet if you're a list management guru and you're a supporter of the Melbourne Footy Club. But he put out a tweet last night at 9 o'clock. This weekend, Port Adelaide Football Club has former Melbourne Football Club draft picks 1, 2 and 4 playing in its SANFL team. Watts, Trengove, Tompas. Doesn't that break your heart if you're a Melbourne Football Club supporter?
Well, it's bizarre, isn't it? Yeah, that's where it's come to. And it's so important. I mean, I look at Fremantle at the moment, and you know, they went and made sure that they got an extra pick high up in that draft. And you sit there now and have a look at Adam Shearer and Andrew Brayshaw. They've got them right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
They've got them right. Yeah, and we're only 12 weeks in, and already you see that Fremantle Dockers have got two players, providing they can keep them, obviously both Melbourne boys, that are going to be long-term solid gold for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
We probably shot ourselves in the foot a little bit. We're 5-2 early in the season, and we let that slip to 6-5 for the bye. So we've got another 11 games left.
So it's Isaac Smith and Sam McClure on Time On last night. Keen to talk to Terry about Hawthorn. Just an update off the SMS. Westgate stuffed. Heading west, traffic is stopped. So no name attached to that. Appreciate you sending it through. If you're heading out that way, or you're thinking about heading out that way in the next little while, maybe think about an alternate way to head west.
And you've had a lot of texts sort of saying, why would Melbourne worry? Shouldn't it be Port's problem? But if you had three picks, if those guys who are all at the right age, and people sort of say, oh, they were 7 or 8 years ago, but you imagine them players all at 27, 28 years of age playing in the way that you would have hoped they would play.
1, 2, and 4.
Added into your side now, yep. And you end up giving them away for next to nothing. So it does still impact.
It's a bigger impact on Melbourne than Port Adelaide. Absolutely. Melbourne's given up way more to get them initially than Port Adelaide has down
correct,
the track.
Correct.
So,
I mean, I know you move on, as the Melbourne supporters are saying. We've got a pretty good squad at the moment.
Oh, beautifully. Yep.
So you move on, but yeah, those players in your side, yeah. How much difference would have it made?
So Isaac Smith, we shot ourselves in the foot. We were 5-2. We're now 6-5.
So where do you sit with Hawthorn? I mean, they're outside, but they're in 10th spot at the moment. They're a game shy of being in the eight, game and percentage shy of being in the eight. But let's remember when we look at the ladder at the moment that West Coast, Port and Hawthorn, West Coast on 40, Port on 28, Hawthorn on 24, have got a game in hand on the rest. So they've got a game in hand on GWS, Collingwood, Melbourne, North, Sydney, Geelong, Richmond, Adelaide. They're the sides up around the eight or in the eight at the moment. Got a game in hand over those teams. So really, you would suggest that that almost brings Hawthorn percentage outside of the top eight.
Yep, yep.
So where do you sit with them? Are they just in the... in the conversation?
I was bullish about him way more than seemingly most based on the reaction I got when I said, I think if all things go well for Hawthorn, I could actually see him winning the flag this year. Now, at 5-2, I was feeling pretty good about myself. Cyril, the revelation recently, doesn't fill me full of confidence that he's got a role to play this year, which dampens my enthusiasm a little bit.
You had some Hawks in your family, haven't you?
I have. I've got surrounded by them.
Well, try this on for the next 2 months. So this is 8 weeks. This is who they play in the competition. And we know that that doesn't guarantee anything, but you'd rather have a reasonable draw than not. So this is who they've got in the next 8 weeks. Not in order. They play 18th, 17th, 15th, 14th, 13th, 12th, 10th, and 9th.
What?
So in 8 weeks, in 2 months, they don't play a side inside the top eight. And that leaves them three games to go, and one of those three games in the middle is St Kilda. So they've got two games.
That's unbelievable.
Two games for the rest of the year against top eight sides.
That's phenomenal.
So if Isaac believed that they may have shot themselves in the foot a little bit by losing a couple of games that perhaps they didn't expect to, that draw gives them plenty of opportunity to still do in the back half what they need to do.
So in terms of that, this Saturday night is a massive potential launch pad for Hawthorn.
Absolutely.
Because they get the game in hand, they get over the top of Adelaide in terms of wins, and that is, I imagine, Terry, that would be, if you want some momentum going into that phase of games that you're talking about, well, here it sits in front of you at the MCG on Saturday night.
And we're all your rivals, and which is one of them you're playing, as you've just mentioned, but we're all your rivals are sitting down having a week off so they can't get 4 points. Or they're playing against each other, hence Geelong-Richmond, Sydney-West Coast, playing against each other where only half of them can get results. So, I mean, they can make up ground very, very quickly if they don't shoot themselves in the foot in this 2 months that they've got coming up. That's a great draw.
Are they good enough to make the most out of that? And when I say make the most, I'm not saying win every one, but win most of those games. Are they good enough?
I've still got some question marks. I had them just inside my my top eight.
Yep.
Fixturing, I always put that as part of my, when we're doing our discussions.
Yep.
So I always have a look at the fixture and what's coming and who's likely to be where. You can't back them in. When they lose a game to Brisbane comfortably in Brisbane, you can't just guarantee and factor in, yes, they're going to be good enough. Now, the flip side of that, they've been able to go down and beat Port Adelaide, who look like being a reasonable side. They've had other good victories along the way. So we know that that's the way it goes. But when you've got a side that's still not capable of just... We've got some sides of the competition that just bash up a Melbourne at the moment.
Mm.
We want to see Melbourne beat a really good side, but they bash up on the sides that they should beat. Hawthorn have got to get that attitude into them and really be able to work it. And you sort of say it's a pretty big week for the Hawks, the Adelaide game on Saturday night, but it's the reunions of the 78 Premiership, 88 Premiership, 2000, the first time really that 2008 group get together to celebrate theirs. That's done all over this weekend. So a very, like, that almost, you know, at times I think that galvanises your club.
Absolutely.
You know, the history of the club's all there, and we've got a big game ourselves. Actually, I don't see them getting beaten.
So it's a big segue, and we've only got a couple of minutes on this, but a segue into Adelaide. Do they look like a team to you now, halfway through the next season, that has had a really dramatically adverse reaction to losing a grand final the way they did?
Yes, yeah, and for so many reasons. The aftermath, the Jake Lever and the best and fairest, and how all that played out. Obviously the camp, which we only know, you know, spasmodic bits and pieces about, but trying to desperately
go to the next level,
get something, you know, drag something out of this group of players. I really always saw Adelaide as a happy team, and you know, some of their players, Sam Jacobs, Tom Lynch, Josh Jenkins, those guys to me just love life and love their footy and were prepared to give of themselves. You know, they'd always come on this station and be involved in things. That's only three that I've sort of mentioned, but it just doesn't look like a happy place at the moment. They look like they're questioning, you know, everything that's going on, from injuries and where they're at. And look, we've seen it in recent times. We saw both Perth clubs get to grand final day, muck it up, and I thought they both mucked it, you know, just did not stand up on the day, as Adelaide didn't last year at all. And it's taken them a fair bit of time to sort of, you know, right themselves. So I think if you've won one with your group and you get to a grand final, I think you've got enough resolve there, because you've got one in the back pocket to sort of realign yourself, and we're coming again. But when you haven't won one and you get to a grand final, and particularly most times you think you're in the game, clearly think you're in the game anyway, but a couple of those sides started as reasonably hot favourites in those grand finals, so they're expected to win, and mucked it up. It can take its toll.
It's game of footy tonight, folks. Adelaide Oval. Weather sounds like it might be a bit inclement. Port Adelaide hosting the Western Bulldogs. Let's keep it on the visitor, Terry, tonight. What do you want to see from the Western Bulldogs in the second half of this season?
I want to see a fair bit from them. I want to see them compete and contest stronger than what they are. We've got a few SMSs sort of saying, oh, make sure you mention about all the players that have been out injured. I'm not sure all of them are coming back. I mean, they sort of say no Clay Smith, no Libba, no Clay Smith, no Dixon, no Adams, no Pickett, no Morris equals no continuity. But I'm not sure all of those are going to be coming back. Mm-hmm. What I want to be seeing from the Bulldogs is what it's going to look like next year, so that I'm getting a clear picture of a side that's starting to build something in the back half of the year, which we see so regularly, you know, with sides where, you know, it doesn't work for whatever reason early, and, you know, that clearly they've had a lot of injuries and played a lot of very inexperienced sides. But the back half of the year, you want to be actually able to see what you think it's going to look like going into another year. Because if you don't see, you know, the structure starting to take place, and, you know, who Luke Beveridge and his coaching staff sort of see as the key pillars that are going to take them forward, if you don't get some look at that at the start of the year, it gets dicey, you know, whether it's actually going to happen going into the following year.
We'll have some news when we speak to Jake Nile about, or potential news about Mitch Wallace, who's back into the side for tonight's game. Out goes Jordan Ruffhead. Do you read anything into that? So second half selections, I think.
I'm reading into Ruffhead. I'm reading into Mitch Wallace. I'm reading into Dalhouse. And I'm reading into others that, you know, there's guys that are there with the microscope on them.
Yep.
They might be looking themselves, but the microscope's back on them the other way as well. So, look, the back half of the year for the Bulldogs is really going to be an interesting spot.
In a tough year, they have announced today that Aaron Norton's contract has been extended to 2020, which is great.
They've got some good youngsters, but, you know, so is everyone.
See you on the match committee with Sam McClure tonight.
Thanks, Andy.
Round 13, 6 p.m. on SEN and AFL.com.au.